Glad to see you all here. Quite a turnout. The first thing we want to let everyone know is, please, if you have a question, you can raise your hand like you're all back in school, or you can just shout it out. Everything is okay. Open forum, that sort of thing. So, as many of you know, Luke and I traveled to El Salvador at the beginning of the summer for 2 weeks. It was a really fantastic trip. I did get sick. That wasn't so fun, but that's all right. It all worked out in the end. And but the experience was just really astounding and amazing. It really changed the way we think and the way we act today. And for me, it gave me kind of a moral clarity. I felt like I had, you know, a greater purpose and something to work on in the future.
Another thing we sort of took away from this experience was observing people in this impoverished country. There's so much happiness there, really. And we here presume so much. We presume that our happiness is rooted in material possessions, and we place so much emphasis on that. But these people in El Salvador were really happy without any of the things that we have. And that sort of, you know, showed us that we can really be happy without all of these things, and that there's something more important than, you know, getting your iPod or, you know, going on the internet and buying X or Y or Z, and that what we really need to focus on is our relationships between each other. And that just sort of is very affirming in that way. So we're going to just tell you about a few of our experiences there. And just every one of these things which we have here in our little list of bullets sort of speaks to those two statements we've just made. The first thing is very, 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 very much illustrates what I just said there. We did some work teaching at this little literacy class for little kids, which was a whole lot of fun. And one day, as the teacher was, you know, showing something to the kids, I was standing in the back of the room, and this very, very, very old man just walked in, and he looked like he was, you know, 95 or something. And he came in and walked into this back room that was sort of separated from the teacher by a wall. And he went in there and started tugging on this electrical cord. And just without talking, he and the teacher worked out this little situation where she stopped teaching and loosened the electrical cord from her side of the wall. And then he wrapped it up and walked out. And he just sort of walked out of the building after that, which was sort of interesting. And I talked to him just a little bit that day. And then from that day on, whenever we passed, he lived on this corner right in town, and whenever we passed him on his corner, he would always say, "Ah, buenos dias," which means good day, really ecstatically, just loved to see us, even though he barely even knew us. He didn't know us. We didn't know his name. He didn't know our name. But we started to notice that this guy just did nothing except stand on his corner and watch the world go by. And, you know, he didn't need anything to make him happy. He was just perfectly content to stand there and watch things happen, which was really cool, we thought, just to be able to derive that sort of satisfaction from being.
Yeah, the happiness and acceptance of everyone seemed to be a reoccurring theme, especially in the village we were in, San Jose Villanueva. It was just kind of astounding, the level of hospitality and the level of acceptance. And there's a lot of, you know, gringos that show up and do their thing, doing Habitat for Humanity or helping out at the local schools. And, you know, they all were just so happy to see us and just felt so wanted. But also, you know, to other Salvadorans, it was just a really friendly atmosphere. Everyone said hello to each other. It's just really incredible, and it was totally okay for people to just wander into your house and sit there for multiple hours and just talk to you, which was pretty cool, except when we wanted to sleep because we were tired. But it was a really unique experience in that aspect as well. But it's kind of juxtaposed with the fact that everyone in the village has double locks on their doors, and you know the barbed wire glass on the walls behind their house. Because as some of you may know, there was a civil war about 10 years ago, which just destroyed the country in many aspects, and there's still a lot of animosity, and you can definitely see how it's affected, especially the younger generation.
Yeah, we met a couple of guys that really became good friends of ours. Their names were Osmin and Adolfo, and Osmin was this, he's this huge guy, really big, not tall, really, but very well built, and he had this booming voice, that filled the room, and he laughed very readily, which was he's a very nice presence. And he just, maybe the second or third night we were in El Salvador, he came to Mike and Susie's house, they're the people we were staying with, and he just kind of dropped by and filled the extra place setting that Susie always sets at the table. She just always puts out an extra place setting so that just in case somebody drops by, which I think is very cool. So he dropped by and filled this place, and after dinner we got into this long conversation about the Civil War, and he just told us the story of El Salvador and his class struggles between the rich and the poor and the government and the peasants from a long time ago, maybe the 1600s or something, and kept saying, it's all history. You can just read this in a book. And we didn't really talk to him about his personal experiences during the war, but one guy that we did talk to was Adolfo. He was 22, and he had just had some horrible experiences. He'd been in the middle of the violence since he was very, very young. Actually saw his brother killed when he was about 6. But both of these guys, they're just really amazing, and so warm and so open. And in just 2 weeks, we managed to forge friendships with them that probably, would have taken years in, an American-style culture, which was, just amazing. Just their resilience from those experiences that they would have that they had, and just the ability to actually interact with people normally after what they'd been through. It's really just amazing, the society.
Well, on the topic of the class struggles that Osmin talked to us about, I'm sure this is true in a lot of Central American and Latin American countries, but in the village we stayed in, there was an hacienda, which is essentially a gated community with armed guards that would put most of our houses to shame here. Quite impressive. And these people had swimming pools and running water, lawns, and the people outside the wall literally would not have running water. And it was crazy to drive by and see a kid swimming in the swimming pool and then some poor old woman walking down the road with an enormous barrel on her head trying to go a few miles to the creek so she could get water that was just not even potable. All the animals, did their thing above in the field, and it got right into the water table.
Yeah, when we were on the trip, we made all sorts of metaphors, just metaphors for everything, which was really a lot of fun. And one of the things we thought about was we saw this completely stark contrast between the hacienda and the really, really poor shacks outside this, on the other side of this wall. And when you're there, you just think, how can these people do this? How can they just live inside this wall while these other people are just dying of, dysentery from the water and whatnot? And But then, you know, we started thinking and we thought, well, we're really on that richer side of the wall too. Just, so it's a, yeah, just a little farther away, and so unfortunate that out of sight, out of mind really, really applies here. So that sort of gave us a, you know, a consciousness again of what needs to be done.
I would say that was probably the greatest gift the trip gave us, just again that clarity and that realization that we can make a difference. That, I mean, I felt like even though our impact wasn't huge, it was just so satisfying to be able to help out a few people, just, you know, a few kids who are just having trouble making it in school, or, you know, parents making ends meet, which is extremely hard. The average daily wage there is $5, but gas is still like $4.85. Of course, none of these people have cars, but yeah, milk might still be a dollar. Even a bottle of Coca-Cola is still a dollar. So it's just amazing how people can actually function and pay for food on such a budget.
You did use the word kids in that last statement. I don't quite remember where, but definitely we had a fun time with kids when we were teaching at this literacy class. The school system there is really, really sort of strange. And I never really got the hang of exactly how it works with uniforms and tuition and who goes to school and why and where. But the upshot of it is there's a lot of kids who aren't in school. And so Mike and Susie started this literacy class where they would get a volunteer teacher to teach a few times a week. And so we went and tried to help out with that. And even that class was, you know, rather discouraging. But the kids there are, you know, they just have the same sort of openness and playfulness that the rest of everybody else there had. And we really had a lot of fun with them. They found out that Matt was ticklish. And
that was just the end of my life right there. Wonderful and horrible at the same time. I couldn't say stop because that would be mean, but it was a good time. But
yeah, and one of the days, actually, we were there during my birthday, and an hour before the end of the class, Susie stopped by, surprising us all with a huge piñata and a bunch of other people, some Habitat for Humanity volunteers who were down there, all came in, and the last hour of the class was just a big party. And again, we were thinking about, I guess it was Susie who said this, the kids just were so ecstatic about the piñata, and actually two of the kids just ran around and destroyed it long after it had been destroyed. They got as much fun out of that thing as humanly possible. And just that sort of, taking that sort of pleasure in that simple little, you know, what?
Act, device, object.
Yes. You wouldn't see that sort of thing in other places. It's quite cool.
Yeah, nothing is taken for granted there. And one kind of frightening fact, like Luke said, is that education is really, really not very good. And there's just huge problems with infrastructure. Where we were, some of the roads were paved so the people from the hacienda could drive their BMWs to work in the capital. But if you know, they weren't going on those roads, they were just muddy and they had huge ruts and just, and, you know, people still walk miles. There were kids that would walk 2 to 3 miles every morning, you know, maybe leaving the house at 4 or 5 to get to school, where there was a school we visited, was that Palomar, that only had running water for 7 minutes every 3.5 days or something like that. And they had these huge tanks that they could fill up, but they were always running out. So another of the metaphors we came up with, it was kind of a strange situation because Western culture has made itself known there through the use of television and the internet, of course. So a lot of Salvadorans seem to be focused on material possessions to some degree. A lot of people want to own TVs, but yet, you know, there's not potable water. The roads are horrible. There's still violence, and the education system is bad. So it's like they tried to pave over the roads of society without building any sort of sewer system or infrastructure underneath. So it's scary because we felt a lot of the times like it could just destroy the country to some degree if they weren't careful and really fixed up the basics before they moved on to arguably bigger and better things.
Yes, Mom?
Could you guys briefly tell them a bit about your helping the high school kids to figure out how to build the how to get the money for the science room, just some of the tools that you gave these kids to work with so that they can continue after you're gone?
Indeed. Well, one of the great things about this, the organization that we went with, Epilogos, was they sort of let us figure out what we wanted to do when we got there. We had a lot of options, and what this started as is Susie talked to us one morning and said, you know, hey, we have some high school kids who need to raise some money. Could you talk to them about what you do, you know, back home and how you raise money, how you organize fundraisers? So we went over there and chatted with them, and it actually turned into probably our most major project, I would say. These guys were just fantastic. It was kind of strange. At first, there was guys and girls. There was maybe 15, 16 of them, and it came down to just 8 guys by the time we were done. I think we might have scared everyone else away. But that's okay. But these guys were just motivated and fantastic and so cool and open to new ideas, and they really did give it as much of an honest effort as they could, and it's going pretty well. But
yeah, we ended up going over to the school every day for the last maybe 8 days we were there, which was really great. And what we would do was, you know, our plan there was to have a dance to raise funds for these guys. Basically, the background on the thing was that Susie and Mike had about $3,000 sitting in a bank account somewhere that they wanted to give to the school in some way. They had this because they have a scholarship fund for the high school, but seeing as it was the year before an election, the government finally decided to pay tuition for this school, making a good impression there. So they had all this money left over for tuition that wasn't used, and they wanted to give it to the school in another way, but they have this philosophy where they never give anything away. They have people work for it and, you know, sometimes pay for it to, you know, build, just sort of empower the community and build skills, and also to foster ownership in all of the things that they give. So they decided they would give this $3,000 to the high school if the high school could raise $1,000, and they would sort of match that. So what we ended up talking with them a lot about what they could do to raise this $1,000 and how they could, you know, put on projects and stuff. And we decided, well, why don't we try dance? Because we do dances here all the time. But then they said, oh, well, you know, we can't have a dance without selling stuff. You got any good dance has drinks sold and whatnot. So, and they didn't have money for that. They don't have much money at all. But what we did decide to do was each contribute $1 towards a prize that we would buy, which was a bag, like a sort of like a, you know, a messenger bag. And so we went out and bought this bag, and then they decided to raffle it off, and they were going to try to make some money that way, and then with that money buy drinks for the dance and hopefully continue on like that. And so before we left, anyways, we actually did buy the bag which was very cool. That seemed like a very concrete start in the thing. And the first day of the raffle was the day we left. So we weren't really able to stay and, you know, keep...
ball rolling.
Keep the ball rolling, yeah. So we don't quite know how things are going there right now. We have emailed the kids down there a little bit, and they said that the school is, for some reason that I have not quite understood yet, the school is not very supportive of their project, which is sort of unfortunate. And I don't know why, but it makes me want to go back.
Dad?
Could you say a little more about Mike and Susie and how they ended up down there?
All right, I'll give you the relatively short story, because it's pretty impressive. Mike and Susie were Peace Corps volunteers and went to some insane-sounding Peace Corps boot camp together. And then they were stationed in El Salvador. They were in different villages. Mike was in the village we stayed in, San Jose. And they met down there, and after some time actually got married down there, and the president of El Salvador attended, which is pretty cool. And then they, you know, they actually had to go back to the States for a while and get honest jobs. And they retired, and their retirement plan was to go back to this village and try to help out more than anything, just to increase the education system and help with infrastructure, city planning. It's the village itself is actually about 13,000 people. But really, really, really spread out. I mean, they'll just be pockets of shacks, really, all over the place. But Mike and Susie are just really fantastic people. Mike, his health isn't so fantastic, but he's still driving on these ridiculously bumpy roads all the time. And just, he is out helping the people day and night. He just never stops, and I just can't even understand how he's able to do that.
Yeah, they're really great. They were so warm and, you know, just made their home ours for the 2 weeks when we were there, which was really fantastic. I really liked that. And again, I also really liked what Matt said about they sort of let us create our own experience there, which was very cool. Since we weren't part of a big group, our activities didn't have to be very structured, so we could just kind of be, there would be times when we wouldn't really have anything to do, and we would just be sitting around, and then there were times when we would just say, okay, Mike and Susie, we're going over to the high school for a couple hours, and then we would just go, which was really great.
As two guys, you went into this school and interacted with peers your own age. How were you accepted among women in that same school of girls, and was there a cultural, you know, reticence to have a whole co-ed interaction with the two of you?
I would say no. I think that the girls found this a little strange at first, especially me, because I had long hair, which some people just thought was the funniest thing in the entire world. But, I mean, obviously we were two American guys, and I'm not sure what that implied. But there was one girl in particular, Gabby, who got to know us pretty well from another girl who was there before, named Alyssa. But I mean, they were at the very least extremely friendly, and they weren't hanging around us all the time like the guys were, asking us about Hollywood movies and rap music. But I don't think there was any reticence, or I didn't feel any.
Asking about culturally, how you interact with your own peers in the States?
To some degree. We tried to exchange words for, you know, cool and sweet. Cool is chivo, by the way, if you ever go to some Spanish country and want to sound like you know what you're doing.
Yeah, a lot of just little language things and teaching each other bits of English and Spanish was really fun. And They, I guess, were attending little English classes every once in a while. And a couple of weeks ago, I got an email from one of the guys who said, like, in Spanish, he said, "I hope that you are well." And then in English, he said, with your friends in your house in your high school, okay. And he said, yeah, you know, I can't speak English, but I wanted to make you laugh. So that was just a huge source of fun.
Can you find your Spanish? Was there a trouble with them? Did they understand you and have a back and forth relationship linguistically?
Well, we improved a lot while we were there, that's for sure. But we've managed to communicate really well, and I think the area we improved the most was just understanding. And we mentioned talking to that guy, Osmin, about the history of the country. That was all in Spanish, and he was just sort of telling this long story. So we were just forced to kind of sit there and absorb it all, and just we managed to get a lot better at that, which was really good. And
yeah, it was great. It kind of got to the point, I think, for both of us where we weren't thinking in English anymore, especially in long, drawn-out conversations. It's kind of hard to explain. I'm sure a lot of you all have experienced it, but instead of the translating it, just images begin to be formed in your mind, so similar like when you're thinking in English. And that was just a really cool moment when I realized what was happening, and then I started translating again because I started thinking about it. But for me, it was kind of hard at first. Understanding was not as much trouble. When I was in the hospital and I didn't know any medical Spanish, that was trouble. I did not know what they were saying when they told me my platelets were low. So that was finally they had someone speak English who explained it to me and told me what the words were in Spanish. So when the nurses came and asked me all these ridiculous questions, I'd actually know what they were saying. So that helped, but. Yeah, it was just, I would say Luke's fluent, even though he might not say so himself.
Oh!
But, I don't know, my Spanish improved to no degree, and it was fantastic. Oh, yeah, that was pretty funny. The village was relatively religious to some degree, and it wasn't overbearing by any means. But when we introduced ourselves as Matt and Luke, or Mateo y Lucas in Spanish, they said, "Oh, where's Mark and John?" They just got the biggest kick out of that.
Everybody, too.
All the adults. I don't think there was probably one that missed out on that. So we ended up saying, "Oh, they're not at home. We left them behind. We kicked him out," that sort of thing. Yeah, that was a great conversation starter. So we knew it was coming. We were really prepared by the time we left.
Is there anything you guys want to say to us to wrap up? You know, anything that you've kind of said so much to us, you know, about the walls that we have that might not be so physically visible, but they're there. And the metaphor of paving things over instead of dealing with everything in its proper way. And we're just so glad that you went and so glad that you shared with us. But just if there's anything else you want us to keep in mind as we are a community of faith, other than recruiting a Mark and a John. But
that will happen the next time we go, so we can have the full set. But seriously, I mean, it's the idea of walls is just so prevalent, and it, you know, I always knew the whole we are privileged here in America thing, but you know, I never really saw it with my own eyes, and now I have, and I feel like I understand it so much more and feel so privileged to live here, because I mean we really have a lot of the same ideals as the Salvadorans. We just got lucky. And we're born here, so I just think that no one should forget what's on the other side of the wall, and it's really not that far away, especially in this age of globalization.
And, yeah, sort of on that note, we tend to get caught up a lot in, all the stresses of daily life, but we always have each other here, and I think that's just the most important thing, and it's easy to get away from that, but every once in a while, a trip like this just centers us back on that idea and renews our faith in each other, I think. So.
Yeah, if anything, if you do sort of a repeat trip of what we did, I mean, I felt like, you know, our moral compasses were probably in the right direction, but they were just set right on north by the time we left in the right direction.